If you like what we're doing at neozaz.com, we kindly ask you to take just a few minutes to check out our new Patreon page. Patreon is an opportunity to support the show and help us produce more specials, series, and events in the future. Check out patreon.com/neozaz to see our milestone goals for the future of the show and the network, and the perks and bonuses offered at our different levels of support. We love creating content at NeoZaz and love doing these shows. We have a lot more we'd like to do, and with this new Patreon page, we look forward to starting those projects very soon. To learn more, visit patreon.com/neozaz. That's patreon.com/neozaz.
There it is. Okay, I'm good.
Oh, yeah, yay. Is that a signal to go, your burp?
Yeah, it stinks. Yeah, I'm good.
Oh,
it's the MGM lion roar.
Hello and welcome to The Great 80s, the great 80s movie debate, where we take a look at the movies from the 1980s and see if they still hold up today. If you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. This episode, we'll be talking... Oops, that's not right.
This doesn't
usually happen, but when you have 8 months between episodes, I guess it's bound to happen.
Maybe Derek should have this one.
Yeah, I know, right? This episode, we'll be taking a look at 1984's Ghostbusters, directed by Ivan Reitman and starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Sigourney Weaver, Ernie Hudson, Rick Moranis, and Annie Potts. My name is Matt, and joining me today are my illustrious panels of 80s movies experts, Christy.
Yo.
You had 8 months to prepare, and you came up with yo?
No, I was going to try and do my best impressions
of
Annie Potts.
You did. That was not your best then.
No.
I haven't heard any others, but I know that ain't the best. All right, moving on.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Oh, there we go.
See, there you go.
There you go.
What would Janine sound like if she was played by the little person in Poltergeist?
Don't do that.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
See, they should put her in that fucking box. God damn it.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Also joining us this episode is Chris.
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
Yeah, baby, that's me.
And also joining us for this episode, our resident Ghostbusters expert, longtime supporter of NeoZaz, Derek.
I collect spores, molds, and funguses.
Wow, you sounded like him when you said that.
That was creepy.
That was weird.
That was weird, because we know that you love Harold Ramis in general, right, Derek?
I tried to once or twice.
Oh, wow.
Well, as we start off every episode of The Great 80s, we go around the room to find out what everyone's experience is with this movie, and I'll start. I did see this in theaters. I think just about everybody our age did. The best memory tied to this, that as any kind of story, is I remember my mother and sister had gone to this, and I was really upset that I didn't go along because I wanted to see this movie. Turned out my mother knew that following weekend I was going to see it with a group of friends at a friend's birthday party, but she didn't want to ruin the surprise for me. So I sat and stewed for a week. I was pleasantly surprised to find out I did get to see the movie days later. And I remember walking out loving it, quoting it, drawing proton pack streams on things everywhere, on school books, whatnot.
That totally doesn't surprise me.
I know, right? Yeah, taking action figures that were not at all Ghostbusters-ish and turning them into Ghostbusters play sets, but using those Ghostbuster toys and having a short-lived fascination with the movie, as I think, just like I said, about everyone our age would have. So, Christy, what was yours?
I think usually my dad would be the one that would take me to this kind of movie. So I believe we probably went to one. I've seen it so many times on television now that it kind of has erased my memory of originally seeing it, but I'm sure I saw it in the theater. Okay. I know I did.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, we'll go to Chris next. We'll save Derek for last because I have a couple of follow-up questions for Derek once I hear his story.
Well, that's a great thing that she just said, because I do not remember saying it to theaters, but I know I had to. I like what Chrissy said. She's seen it so many times, it probably erased the original time she even saw it. And I'm using that.
Okay.
Because I saw it like 800 times, yes, but I don't remember sitting down there and have it come up on screen and start watching it, but I've seen it a lot.
Okay. Now, Derek, I did say opening the show, you're our resident Ghostbusters expert. You're a huge fan of it. And I do want to say outright, before we even get started here, when you have something to share, no matter who's talking, especially me, jump in and share it, because I am very curious to hear some of these facts coming from you during this. But to start off, where did this all start for you?
Well, for me, it was more, I was a little bit younger than you guys, so I didn't get to see it in the theater. But I was one of those kids that in the 80s, when we went to birthday parties, we did one of two things. We either watched Star Wars or we watched Ghostbusters. And I can't tell you how many birthday parties I went to where Ghostbusters was what we watched. So I've seen it many, many times, but it wasn't until years later that I got to see it in the theater.
Your fandom for it, how do I want to ask this? You're not a cosplayer, are you? And I'm not judging if you are, but what level of fandom do you have for I actually have some comments on how I can completely see getting into being a cosplayer for this, but that's later. But what kind of fan would you describe yourself as, I guess, is the best way I can start this question.
Are you an Aquarius?
Sagittarius. I am one of those fans that if this is on the television, even if it's the last 5 minutes, I will sit and watch. I don't care what else is going on, to the point where I've sat through the end of Ghostbusters 2 because Ghostbusters was coming on after it. I had a ton of the toys growing up. I wish I still had them. I'm actually looking at a design that a buddy of mine did for t-shirts and posters and stuff that I'm actually going to get tattooed at some point. But no, I have not cosplayed yet. Okay. It would be an easy one to do. I mean, really, you kind of just need a jumpsuit. But,
right.
But I've, from doing the conventions, I've seen some unbelievable cosplays.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Now, you brought up something interesting that I never even made a note of. So I want to ask this question so we don't tarnish anything we're about to talk about. Where does Ghostbusters 2 fall into this for you? Because that one comment you made didn't sound like you have a high regard for it.
No, I like Ghostbusters
2. Oh, okay.
You just got a bust on it.
Yeah, okay. All right. I was just curious.
You know, it's not like Caddyshack 2.
Yeah, or Highlander 2, which I had recently listened to the Highlander episode.
Or five. Yeah. Or Highlander 1. Yeah, really.
Okay.
Or Breaking 2. Electric or Rocky Boogaloo. 5.
Oh, I like Rocky 5. Stop it.
Or Rocky anything after 1.
Chrissy, it was nice having you on the show. Thank you.
I had to do it. I had to.
All right. Well, let's get into this. And again, Derek, whenever anything that comes up that is worth telling, please, by all means, speak up and share. I'm sure anyone listening would love to hear it, too. So I really just want to start talking about this at the beginning of the movie for several reasons. One, because to me, I think this is one of the most memorable opening scenes of just about any movie, in my opinion. I mean, I'll tell you right now, guys, I've not seen this movie probably in 20 years, but I knew everything that happened before it happened because everything about this movie is so memorable, including the opening, which another note I have here about that is that we're looking at practical effects in this part. Now, we get into some special effects later, for better or for worse, but this opening scene with the ghost pretty much just messing around in the library, building up to what we're going to see after the opening titles, is awesome. I love this scene.
When I was looking at it, I watched the other night, when the books go across from one bookcase to the next,
uh-huh.
I was trying to look for like a wire or something, and I can't see anything.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like there's a book going from one bookcase to the fucking next. I'm like, where's the wire?
Yeah, nowadays you can do that, and you can have like a fluorescent orange wire doing it and take that out so easily with computers. But back then, they had to make sure this was not seen on camera. So this is art. This is almost, when we talk like this, I sound like a real old, almost curmudgeon, but this, I think,
They got out of my yard.
A lot of these effects in this movie are quickly becoming a lost art.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Christy to see if she had anything.
No, like I remember watching it going, oh, I remember some things were cheesy. But the books, I forget. I had forgotten how you just kind of get chills and go, oh, how did they do that?
The cards, how the cards were flipping out, like, just in I want to say sequence, but not there in a number. But like now, one at a time, but very quickly coming out in order. It's like, that is just amazing.
Like, nowadays, that would be pawned off on CGI.
Exactly.
And you get
That's
some little snot-nosed 19-year-old at Full Sail or something doing it and getting it done. And it's like, this was an art. Somebody had to physically mock it up, figure it out, and put their, you know, elbow grease into it and get those flying. And this actual opening scene made me hate libraries.
And it was flawless, too. You couldn't, like Chris said, you can't see anything. I mean, when those cards are coming out of the catalog, you can look and look, and it just looks like they happen to be open and everything's flying out. You don't see them pushing or anything like that.
Right. Do you know how they did those cards? Because that was the one thing I could never quite, watching this, I was trying to figure out how they did it, and I have a theory, but I don't think it's very good.
I heard something.
No, I haven't seen anything either.
I thought I heard or read something like from the other side of the wall. There was a vacuum. There's all vacuums.
Okay. Oh, that's
blowing in there and blowing them all out.
That's close to my. I thought it had to be some kind of air pressure because I mean, when you do a practical effect like this, you're gonna have to refoley the entire soundtrack. So it didn't matter how much noise you were making. But they were still kind of going out and up. So I still don't know. I guess powerful enough fans in the right position could do that. Again, a lost art. I wouldn't have no idea how to do that. So I was just curious if anyone knew that.
Well, Derek, I read something when they walk past that like one bookcase and it falls.
Yeah, when they go back to the library.
Yeah.
The bookcase that falls, well, it just fell. And they kind of just ad-libbed along with it. It wasn't supposed to fall.
Yeah, I wondered if that was the case.
Which is great about this movie is most of it, which is so great, it was just all ad-libbed and just made off the spot. There was hardly even like a script kind of thing. You know what I mean? And this, it shows you so much of how great Murray, Ramis, Aykroyd are.
Okay, that brings one of the big points I wanted to talk to everybody about was the cast. I mean, this is an ensemble cast of a very big part of, well, at least me and Chris's childhood. I'm not sure how much Christy had watched their work, and it sounds like Derek is a little younger than us, but Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and then you throw in Ripley, and then you got, for me, one of the McKenzie brothers from Strange Brew. I mean, this is going into this movie as a 12-year-old.
It's gold.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not one of those ones that where, to me, watching it again, not one of them is like trying to upstage everybody else and make it their movie. They are all working together to make this film, and like I said, they're working together. They are an ensemble. They're not five stars.
There's definitely a lot more give and take than you know, you get hyped up into the like relationships between people in the original Saturday Night Live cast, and you hear about how this this one was a diva or this one had attitude, and then you can't see any of that there. I mean, they actually do look like they're having fun and liking each other.
Well, one of the things that I saw just going along with that was that Aykroyd and Ramis used to mess with Murray. They did something where they like loaded his proton pack with like 40 extra pounds.
Oh God.
They said they did that just because he would get pissed off and aggravated and it made him funnier. So they liked to see him get funnier when they would do that. Oh, so yeah, it sounded, you know, you listen to the stories about like Caddyshack or about Animal House where it was just kind of like a party scene. This definitely sounded like they were just there having a good time.
That's cool.
I just read how they did the cards.
Okay.
Ramis did an interview and said that they were just some technicians behind a wall blowing air through a copper tubing in order to make the cards swirl around so creepily.
Okay, so I was thinking big fans, but it's more of compressed air.
Like, well, they had. I think what it sounds like is they had the tubes underneath and
the cards weren't secure.
Yeah.
Oh, see? No, I would have never thought of that. And I doubt many special effects artists half my age would think of that these days.
Nope.
Yeah.
Chris, we'll have to try that with mine next time you come down. We'll have to set I have a card catalog in my house. It's currently filled with booze, but we'll put some cards in it and we'll set up some tubes and see if we can reenact it.
I'll be happy to blow anything at your house, Derek. Anything.
Yes. Well, then you can be the one to slime the bookcase too.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about the ensemble cast. Speaking of the roles of characters here, now Bill Murray is Peter Venkman. His opening scene, the shock therapy scene, another memorable scene.
Oh, yeah.
I love the little bits of the showing the card, not showing the card, and just he is in total control of this kid's fate while he's hitting on this girl. Great casting there. Ray Stantz, played by Dan Aykroyd, who is the true believer of all. He's probably more the wide-eyed child of everybody in this. Harold Ramis is Egon Spengler, the brains of the operation. And reading through things on IMDb, Wikipedia, and some other sources, there was quite a bit of different casting here and there, namely John Belushi. Mm-hmm. As what role was he going to be? Venkman? The Venkman character?
Belushi was going to be Venkman until he died.
Okay.
But there were two other people that were looked at for Venkman, too.
Who was that?
Chevy Chase.
Oh,
because of SNL. And this one's for Chris. It was Michael Keaton.
I did hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That I could kind of see, because I do have to say, I wrote in my notes, Bill Murray is not an attractive man.
No, he's not, but he still has to be suave. And that's
he's charismatic. He's just something about him where you like to hear him talk.
he's got the talk.
And I liked John Belushi a lot. I mean, I like Animal House, Blues Brothers, I love, but I am not sure how I would have liked.
I think I could have seen him because.
But he's more slovenly in even as.
But Jake if you
Blues,
if you
he's a slob. In
no,
a sense.
But if you ever saw, he did a movie called Continental Divide.
No, I don't have not seen that.
He did a movie called Continental Divide, and he had to be like a romantic lead. And he was actually pretty put together for that. Like, wore like a vest and sweater vest and ties and stuff like that because he was supposed to be a writer. And very different. So, in that way, I could kind of see him doing it. But
but there's a lot of running in this movie.
That's true.
That is true.
Derek, who was John Candy supposed to be?
He was supposed to be Rick Moranis.
Now,
Lewis.
Okay. Of all the casting changes I've read, as much as I love Rick Moranis in this, which I do, I think John Candy could have done something with this role, too.
Yeah, I heard that he had too many demands.
Yeah, I heard that, too.
He wanted to play him German.
Oh.
Yeah. Like what's-his-face from The Producers.
Never seen that one.
I keep thinking of his character on SCTV.
Which one?
He had a German one where he wore like lederhosen and everything.
Now see, when I read that when John Candy was going to play Lewis, the vision that popped into my head was his security guard character in Vacation.
Yeah, that could have worked.
Yeah.
Do you know who I'm torn? Is Ernie Hudson's character was almost Eddie Murphy?
That might have actually broke the ensemble.
I think so. I think you're right. I love Eddie. You know, me too.
I think he would have chewed the scenery.
I think so. For being Ernie, like, I think that's why I think Ernie Hudson's role wasn't as big, because it was Ernie Hudson, not Eddie Murphy. Like, Eddie had like a bigger role if it was him all along. But he wouldn't have, I wouldn't have seen him take the spotlight away from Bill Murray.
It would have been too much. I mean, you got Ernie, he's kind of like a no name at that point. Kind of still is, but he's like the regular Joe, and then you got the three goofballs, so you kind of have, you know, somebody to counteract all that.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I have a quote, an Ernie Hudson quote, that I'd say like every time I go to a sporting event. Let's see if I want to see. I know Christy won't get this. I'll be curious if Derek or Chris get it. And don't skip on the onions.
Is he serving food somewhere?
No. He's asking for it. Yeah, Derek got it.
Yeah, when he's
onions,
when he's
lots of onions. Yep. That's it. First he says, yeah, don't skip on the onions, and come on, onions, lots of onions. And then the little girl said, onions make you fart big time. But anyway, I had to throw a fart in there for Chris.
Farting's funny.
Those are the two movies I know Ernie Hudson from, Ghostbusters and The Crow.
No, I know Ernie Hudson. I cry my eyes out. The Hand on the Rocks the Cradle. Good God.
Oh, God, I've never seen that.
Oh, he's the gardener, right?
He's like a mentally challenged gardener who gets picked on or thrown down and there's something. And I'm like, leave him alone. I was bawling my eyes out, man.
Yeah, like a mentally challenged. All right, one more casting thing we have to talk about. I'm sure more will come up as we get to the characters, but the late Harold Ramis is Egon Spengler, which also leads into my conversation about the writing of this, which was Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. And I had read, and I'm sure everyone has read, that Harold Ramis did not intend to play Egon until he was done writing, and then came to the decision that only he could play Egon. I don't know how true that is. I'm sure there's much truth to it, but it's a decision I have to agree with, because I, of all three of the main Ghostbusters, as much as I love Bill Murray as Minkman, as much as I think Dan Aykroyd pulls off a great stance, no one else could have pulled off Egon Spengler, in my opinion.
There was a big list for those for the people they wanted to get for that role too.
Like
they had Christopher Walken.
Oh my God.
John Lithgow.
Oh.
Jeff Goldblum.
That was the only one I saw that I went, I could probably watch that, but it wouldn't have been this Egon.
Right.
Yeah, the only one I saw that I was thinking that was Christopher Lloyd. They said that there was a chance that Lloyd might do the role.
Oh, isn't this the same year as Back to the Future?
A year before, I think. 85.
Okay, 85. Okay, I was going to say, if this was the same year, that would have been tough to watch him as these two roles. We know the principals, characters. We know the history behind him. Now we get into the movie. We get into the opening title, which is we see the Ghostbusters and we hear the song, and that's about it. And for some reason, my memory thought this was a lot longer. And I attribute that to probably having heard the song for the past 20 years, but not seeing the movie. I just hear that tune, and I expect to hear the whole song. I was a little taken by surprise when we got right back into the movie after the logo.
Do you think the song made the movie, or did the movie make the song?
No, I don't. Well, that's odd question.
I think the cameos made the song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In the video? Yeah, true.
Yeah.
The song works well with the movie, but you take the song out, and I don't think that's going to harm the movie. So,
no.
Do you guys ever hear the story about Huey Lewis?
Yeah. I only just heard about this like in the past 3 years.
He won the lawsuit, didn't he?
He did.
We were watching one of those BH1 things, and this is the very first time I heard about it. And it was like 3 years ago. What was the deal? It was because
I Want a New Drug.
Uh huh.
It's like really really close to dum 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 dum, dum, like the underlayer. Yeah. So
that was
he
it?
Sued
just for that piece of music.
Sued.
Wow.
Yeah, he did.
And the judge found it close enough, like that they said. Mm-mm.
I never heard it. I mean, I don't even hear the comparison, to tell you the truth.
When they compared it on this thing we were watching, I heard it, but I had to really stretch to hear it. So
it's not like the really Tom Petty, Sam Smith thing.
I didn't hear that either until this dude on YouTube sped one up and slowed one down and played them on top of each other.
True.
So that took some work too to hear. I don't know. I mean, like Tom Petty said, there's only so many notes in the world. This shit happens. I don't think he said the shit part, though. He was probably pretty high.
Yeah.
So now we start into the main. Well, I guess we're getting started into the main part of the story, and the guys are tracking down this specter in the library that we didn't actually see before the credits. We saw the librarian react to it.
Right.
And this is another one of those scenes that, again, I've not seen this. I'm not kidding. For 20 years, and I'm quoting, there's so many quotes in this movie that have stuck with me for 20 years, for two decades. And I think, Derek, I think you posted this on Chris's page, the one from, I'll let you quote it, the first quotable line of the movie from Ray.
Oh, yeah. I sent this to Chris last night when I was watching the movie. I sent him a text.
You did.
When they're getting close, they pass these stacked books, and he stops them all and goes, "Listen, did you smell that?"
Yeah.
now,
You know, smell something.
Do you know what's weird is that Derek and I saw this the 30th anniversary of the Ghostbusters, I think a couple months ago, or whatever, in a theater. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen this movie 800 times. I know everything. I'm smart. I'm a genius. And when he says that, I start laughing for 20 minutes straight because I never caught. He said, listen.
Really?
I swear to God, do you smell something? I never caught that. Never, ever, ever. Ask Derek. I've sat there like by his side for like 20 minutes just cracking up.
Yeah.
I never noticed it. I felt so like stupid all these years. That's a funny joke. I love that.
Did you not notice it or did you not remember it? Because we all know how that memory works.
That's a damn good point. But that is a great line. And is that was that written form or did he just come up with it? I mean, it's so great.
Right.
I think 95% of this movie was ad lib, so
Yeah.
I don't even have any sequence. I was having so hard a time writing quotes down as opposed to notes that they're out of order. Every time something looks unusual at work that is not that big a deal, I always quote, no human being would stack books like this. That's a quote I use at work all the time. Usually it has to do with computers, but it's like, no human being would save data like this and puts perspective in for everybody. This is okay. I know this is an unusual format for the show, but this is a hard one to talk about because we love it so much. So I'm really just concentrating on why we love it in this episode. And one of the first big notes I have that have anything to do with the culture it's wrought was the props in this movie are so freaking awesome. They're so perfect to what they're doing. That sensor, which Derek, you'll have to help me out. What's the name of that thing Egon's using with the two bars on the side that light up with
the PKE reader.
PKE reader, yes. That's just
don't ask me what PKE is.
Oh, you know what? I wonder if they said it. Paranormal something energy, but kinetic is kinetic is okay, but it's paranormal kinetic energy.
You just made yourself smart.
There you go. All the props in this thing. Now, seeing the props like this, I could really see the prop building side of the cosplay of this because they're so cool looking and so perfect for this story. That just seems like something a professional ghost hunter would have in his arsenal. And I don't know what it does, but I'm looking at it working and I'm seeing exactly how it works. I mean, it's like a divining rod. The lights are going faster and the sides are going up the closer he's getting to a ghost. I mean, it's a great one of many great props we're going to see through this movie.
Yeah.
I think it was Kenner or Mattel when they re-released the movie last year, they actually put out, you know, like not a working model, but like a working model with the lights and everything of this and of the trap, like a full size, what they would be in the movie.
I'm looking for it right now.
Yeah.
Stop everything.
Pause the cast. Go to eBay.
Ooh, $360. It's holy. It's shit. Cool. Ain't that cool?
Yeah, the toys for this for Ghostbusters are ridiculously priced. Yeah. I've been looking to get one of the demon dogs just to stick it in my freezer. And you know, for such a stupid little gag, I mean, they're easily selling for $150, and it's been that way for a long time.
Yeah, but Derek, isn't your freezer already occupied by a Wampa?
Yeah, there's a couple of snowtroopers in there.
I knew there was. I saw it. I know. I remember.
Two more things I want to mention about this scene, and then we'll get move on here. Or else we're gonna have an 8-hour episode. This is just about the library, yeah.
Just about the library. Yeah.
The ghost, the first ghost we see. What a great effect that does hold up. And it's essentially an effect that's been used for almost 100 years now by carnies and haunted house people. It's a film version of Pepper's Ghost, where it's just a light. It's not a reflection in this case, but Pepper's Ghost is a reflection. If you've ever been to the Haunted Mansion at Disney, either Disney, that's the effect they use. So that's what I think they're mimicking in this. And it just looks, the woman specter of this looks so good. Again, having not seen this for so long, I'm expecting to have a lot of bad things to say about the effects. And the first one I'm expecting to talk about, I'm sitting here glowing about and loving what I'm seeing on screen.
You're glowing just as much as a ghost glowed. Put it all together. See that?
Which leads to the appearance of this ghost leads to the infamous line, get her.
Oh my God. that's just so funny. Like, I think I've said that all my life. Whatever the dog loser, get her or something. It's always Matt's right. This move is quoted non-stop in your life.
And then when when you have a real deep affection for the movie, like I think we all do, when someone else says get her, your immediate reaction is to go, get her. And usually the person you say it to does not get it, but there's always that one person in the group that does, and then they're your friends for like the next 5 years.
Get her. That's great.
That's your whole plan? Get her. All right, I'm just reciting the movie now. So now, after this excursion, we finally get the plot in motion to why the Ghostbusters even exist. Their research lab is being packed up, and they're getting kicked out of the university. But with this encounter to their recent discovery, they have a plan. So they need some money, and I don't even know if there's a whole like novelization or any other kind of backstory here, but what I got was that Ray mortgaged his house or his parents' house for the money, and that's I guess about all I needed, because I don't have anything else after that. I really don't have any questions about it. I am just curious though, Derek, if in the different versions of the storytelling for this, if there is any kind of Ray Stantz prequel house story or anything.
No, okay. Nothing that I've ever seen. I mean, he just puts a third mortgage on his house.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. I was just curious. It seems like one of those things that could or couldn't be. I mean, I'm basing this after the crap we've read in Star Wars and for Star Wars and characters. Like some people take the most innocuous thing in a story and make a much larger story out of it. And this seemed like something that could happen too. So I would have been surprised as equally to find out that there was or wasn't. When they're talking, I had this note, and this is the first I'm going to mention about the new movie, and probably the only time. And,
good.
Yeah, I took Chris's. When they were talking about getting this business started, Venkman makes the comment about the franchising rights alone. Think of the franchising rights alone. Now, again, I think in the whole Star Wars in character mindset, I heard this line and said, I wonder if that's going to be the explanation for the new movie. Did these four girls buy a Ghostbusters franchise, and that's what this story is going to be?
I think that has something more to do with what the original script was, because the original script was supposed to be set in the future, and they were like one office of the Ghostbusters, and they were a franchise thing throughout the galaxy or the universe or whatever it would be, that there were Ghostbusters all over the place, and this was, you know, they were like cops or exterminators or something. So maybe that was something that was left in from the original.
That like sounds like that R.I.P.D. movie that came out.
Oh, and that was not as good.
I don't want any. Like Derek and I were talking earlier. Make a movie. Make them chase ghosts. Make them bust ghosts. Whatever you want to have them do. Don't call it ghost. Bust ghost.
Bust ghost.
Yeah. Don't call it Ghostbusters. This is not gonna be Ghostbusters. You can't put that name on this movie. Not Ghostbusters.
Wait a minute. That's not fair, because Episode 7 is going to have primarily new characters and stars, and you can't wait for that movie.
Well, if there's wars and stars, so you can call it Star Wars.
Oh, I see. Okay, so they're busting
ghosts, and they can't be called Ghostbusters?
That you heard me right.
Wow.
Derek, please help me. Back me up on this one.
I have to agree with Chris to an extent. Yeah! I mean, at least with the Star Wars, they're going to have all new characters and stuff, but they're an extension of the previous characters, you know?
So are these. Maybe they're the daughters of the Ghostbusters.
They said unequivocally that they have no connection to the original.
Oh, really? Oh, I hadn't heard that. I wouldn't have made my argument if I knew that.
They said, I think, who's it, Fig? Is it Paul Fig that's doing this?
Yeah.
He said the only connection it has to the original movies is the fact that it's in New York.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm actually upset to hear that.
I'm sorry.
That's why I'm not doing the show for another 8 months. Every time I do this show, my heart gets broken a little more. Anyway. Okay, well, that is luckily my only note about the 2016 Ghostbusters. My next note is we meet another arguably character, definitely an icon of the movie, and that's the firehouse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With one of the greatest sales real estate transaction scenes of all time.
You know, that was actual.
What?
They I was reading an article about it, and that all the exterior scenes are in New York, but all of the interior stuff they had firehouses in L.A. That's what they used for the interior spots. And Dan Aykroyd actually did slide down the pole, and they wrote it into the movie.
Ooh.
That wasn't scripted.
Okay.
He when they were scouting locations, he actually found, he was like, this is so cool. And they actually added it into the movie.
That's cool. I like
because
that.
Yeah, of one of the.
If you were in a firehouse, wouldn't you want to go down the pole? Yeah.
That's the first thing. Yeah, I mean, that would prove to me, first and foremost, I'm in a firehouse. And then second, yeah, I'd want to slide down the pole.
You mean other than when they say, welcome to firehouse?
That's there's no pole in those firehouses. Don't call, I'd be like, Chris, don't call it firehouse. If you don't have a pole, you know, make your sandwiches, serve your drinks, give me a pickle, whatever. Don't call it firehouse.
Mm-hmm.
That sound enough like Chris?
Yeah.
No, it's weird is that scene when Harold Ramis came down the pole. It looked like he was like a little bit scared.
Yeah, he did. He looked frightened.
Yeah, like he was like, oh, wow, it worked. Like almost like, damn. Did you get that? You know, yeah.
And I'm curious if that is if that was an Egon thing or a Harold Ramis thing, because I don't know. I mean, if you are definitely afraid of heights, looking through a hole from any floor, even though it's the second floor, but that's a firehouse floor. That's like three floors. That's if you're scared of heights, that's probably frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was worried that Chinese food was going to come back up.
So now to get the actual plot in motion. We have a scene or elsewhere in the city, and we see Dana getting out of a cab with a shot. It's an interesting shot over one of the demon dogs.
Yeah, and you can see through it on a cave. There's a cars that go underneath.
I didn't even notice that. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we see Dana. We don't meet her much yet. We see follow her in her apartment. The first one I think we actually meet, if I'm not mistaken, at least voice wise, is Lewis.
Yeah.
Because Lewis comes out to greet her.
Yeah. Like always.
Yeah. And I love, and Lewis is, this transaction is great. It was really great for me to see right now because everything he said in the scene was like about the 80s health craze, which mm-hmm. now come around to the 2010s is like almost exactly the same. It's like people are talking about the same things, the same foods, the same exercises. I'm like, wow, not much. Actually, that's not true. A lot has changed in the exercise craze, but this is where we're back at now when I hear people talk about mm-hmm. self-motivate or self
I was doing exercise. CrossFit,
yeah.
And then I was doing some Taibo. Well, that's kind of old, actually, but
those are
vitamins.
Yeah. CrossFit.
No, it's weird as watching this movie and seeing him, I miss Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
Like, I wish he was doing more stuff now, you know?
Yep. Oh, I agree. Yeah. Yeah. I've always liked him ever since Strange Brew. I met him. I was introduced to him through Strange Brew and then followed him through SCTV and then, of course, Ghostbusters. And even Honey, I Shrunk the Kids to an extent is entertaining in large part to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now. Should we get in the apartment and the Ghostbusters commercial is on, which is always that. I mean, I love that commercial.
We're ready to believe you.
But you know, it's funny. And I was like, I'm sure I saw this as a TV commercial and they used it to promote it. And then I read in something, probably IMDb. And again, Derek, you could probably elaborate on this. This was also the very first trailer released for the movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they actually, it was instead of a 555, they put a 1-800.
Right.
And when you called it, you got one of the three leaving some kind of a, you know, come see Ghostbusters. They said, the notes that I saw, they said they got 1,000 calls an hour for 24 hours for 6 weeks.
Wow.
But just to step back for a second before she goes into the apartment, I saw something really interesting that I'd never noticed before. And then when I watched it again about a month ago, somebody had posted something about this on one of the boards. They noticed that Lewis gets locked out of his apartment.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Not to skip ahead, but he gets locked out three times in the movie. And if you think about what his title is later in the movie, it's a little ironic that he keeps getting locked out of his place.
Yeah.
Yep. Never caught that. That's awesome. Yeah. Never caught that.
Yeah, I read something similar to that too, and I was like, "That is ironic." That's just another good piece of storytelling that it's so subtle.
It's so subtle.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I've also noticed in watching all the men in this movie, sideburns did not exist in the '80s.
I didn't notice.
If you watch all three of them when they're you know getting together and they're talking about things, even like the mayor, all of them. like the sideburns are cut really, really high to the point where they don't have them.
Oh.
It's it's weird things I notice when we
leave
watch
it to a woman to notice that one.
Yeah. Sigourney Weaver has no sideburns.
So now, as much as I raved about the practical effects of the opening scene, if there's one that, if you were to ask me what is the best practical effect in Ghostbusters, I think this is it. I think it's where the eggs are bouncing out of the carton onto the table and frying.
Good pre-placement of the Stay Puft
Marshmallows. Yeah, which is like, that's one of those things that I did not notice on the first watching by any means, but of course now that Stay Puft is a staple in my head of ultra villains, I couldn't help but notice it this time. Well, what did you guys think about that? I mean, there was the 2014 of me looking, oh, okay, those are just being eggs shot out from underneath. It's pretty obvious, but still, I'm watching this and thinking it's pretty damn cool. What would you guys think on this viewing of it?
I loved how they cooked right on the countertop. They pop right out and they land and they start cooking, which was great. For 1984 time, it was really cool.
Okay.
Yeah, it still had that practical feel to it. I mean, it still looked just so clean. Like that could actually just happen.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That wasn't just me. But on the flip side of that coin, we can't avoid it. That was a practical effect. Then she opened the fridge.
Yeah. It was all good until the fridge.
Every fridge has a light bulb, even if it's inside the dog's mouth. All right.
Well, first is the pyramid of Gozer, or what? I mean, that's what I call it in my notes. I don't know what it was called, which is, you know, it's early CGI or CGI enhanced. I got to give it some credit, but not really holding up to the test of time, unfortunately.
Looks like one of those 80s MTV videos.
Yes, it did look like a music video. That is a perfect analogy. That is perfect. Okay, so not to belabor that point, I'll just say we move back to the firehouse and we meet, which I have noted in my notes, and I don't know if I coined this phrase, I'm sure I'm not the first to say this, but I am referring to this as the fifth Ghostbuster, and I am talking about Ecto-1, and it's the purchased form. It's not cleaned up yet. The first we see of it, and Ray says he got a bargain for it. He bought it for $4,800, to which Vinkman's reaction says it all. But I'm thinking, $4,800 for a used car isn't that bad. Well, I had to do the inflation. That's $11,050 in today's cash, today's terms. So, okay, I can see his reaction now. That's pretty expensive.
I think a text from Derek a couple months ago of an Ecto-1 he saw for sale on Craigslist.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? You were like, oh, if I only had so much money.
What was it going for?
I need to stay off the Craigslist. I also sent him one of those sit down Star Wars arcade games.
The 70s one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, it was somebody had taken the station wagon. The Ecto-1 was a 59 Caddy, but somebody had taken a newer station wagon and did all the top work and the lights and all that kind of stuff. And I think they were selling it for like $6,000.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it was either that or hot water in the house. So,
I did see, where the hell did I see this? Some kind of, I couldn't have been a car show because I don't go to car shows. Maybe it was a convention. It may have been MegaCon. I think it was MegaCon, actually. Someone made an Ecto-1 out of the newest Dodge station wagon, like the Magnum or something. I forget what it's called. It's the only modern station wagon, I think, on the market. So it's basically, I mean, it's a station wagon, but it has all the smooth lines that any other car would have, but someone bought one and made an Ecto-1 out of it, which looked okay, but I'm gonna take the Chris argument and say it's not Ecto-1.
That's right, it's Ecto-2.
That's right,
Ecto-2. The Ecto-1 though is fantastic, and it's an iconic car. Like there's that DeLorean kit, like all these cars, like, you know what it is and where it's from.
Yeah,
and they only had you know, one car to use. Like, you know, most movies they'll have a few extra, especially if they're going to get destroyed or something like that. But they only had one Cadillac to use for the whole thing. And they said by the end of it, they were like pushing it down the street because it just wouldn't run.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they said that in the, what is it? The beginning of Ghostbusters 2, it really was hanging on by a thread, just like the movie.
Oh, So after we meet Ecto-1, we meet another memorable character, and that is Janine, which Christy referred to right out in the opening of the show. Janine the Secretary.
Ghostbusters.
What do you want? That's pretty good, though. She does a good one there.
And another just slew of quotable lines. I mean, I don't want to take them all. Do you guys have any you want to mention before I rattle through my short list here?
I just know her yelling, "We got one." Okay, that's the one I always remember her saying.
I love it when she's on the phone and she goes, "Yes, we are serious."
True.
Mine are two, Janine. Vinkman saying, "Type something. What you were paying for this?"
Yeah.
And a line I use to this day. I would say it's not a far stretch of the imagination to say I have used it in the past 7 days, is when she looks at Egon and says he looks like a big reader, and his answer is, "Print is dead." Hmm. I say that line all the time. When anyone talks about a book, a newspaper, Chrissy, you can concur with that.
He does.
I have not bought a paper anything to read in like 10 years at this point. Comics, books, newspapers, all on the iPad or online.
Something. Well, you were paying for this.
There you go. Now, I wonder. I wish I knew what was written, what was just ad libbed. You know,
that's
a great line.
Yep. And I did have a note here. I don't think this is even. I need to point this out because I'm sure everybody else noticed the Apple II in the lab as soon as they walked in. Correct. I mean, I couldn't have possibly been the only one that saw that.
Yeah, that's some high tech material right there.
Look at my wife. She's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I must went to the bathroom that scene because I didn't see it.
I started with a 2GS. I'm there with you.
Oh, buddy. Okay, cool. Very nice. So, Peter, after they get the call, Peter goes, or they get the first call they get is from Dana. They don't even get the hotel call yet at this point in the story. So, they get the call from Dana. He goes over to investigate. And another great prompt, although I was reading.
I did see this, yeah.
I don't know. I forget what it said, though. It's apparently this thing exists. This was a thing. This wasn't like a prop built for the movie. It was actually a thing, but damn if I can remember what the hell it was.
I saw it, too. It was that pump, that air pump thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn, I forget what it was, too.
I can't remember what it was, but I love his explanation of it was awesome. It's very technical.
Yeah. Because he had no idea what it did, you know? Yeah, he was right. Just there showing off to her.
Yep. So now I had this just out of nowhere, no explanation for it. I guess this is a Dana line. It says, "You don't act like a scientist, you're more like a game show host."
She made that up.
Did she really?
Yeah, okay. Originally, because I was reading notes about that she was, this was her first trying of doing something comedic, and originally it was, the line was, you really, you're a scientist, so I thought you were a used car salesman. Okay. And she changed it to, "I thought you look more like a game show host."
Okay. Well, she did a good job then.
She did, yeah.
Now, I have a note here, and this, I don't know, Chris, I don't mean this to sound bad. I mean this to be complimentary, so I hope you don't get upset at this, or anyone get upset at this, but pretty much for the entire run of the 80s, it's my opinion that Bill Murray never really acted. He always just played himself, except for Caddyshack. That's the only role I ever consider him acting in. Otherwise, he's always playing himself.
I agree with that.
Except for this scene, because he does a great bit of acting when he's in the kitchen and he starts to realize there's something weird going on, and he is doing a very subtle but very effective job of avoiding looking in the refrigerator. I was like, wow. Bill Murray's acting in a scene, and he's acting really well.
Mm-hmm. True. He's gotten a lot better. He's the latest movies, he does act. But back then, yes, you were absolutely correct.
Okay. I didn't know. I remember saying that to someone before, and they got not upset, but they argued with me right away.
My eyes go right to the freaking 1984 Coke can.
That's what I have, too. New Coke in the fridge is my next note.
You really,
definitely some cheap plugs there.
I love seeing like the old shit back in the day, like in a fridge or on the table, and there was the old Coke can.
If they only had the Bill Cosby New Coke commercial playing on the TV when they walked in.
Oh, man.
Oh, New Coke. It hides the taste of roofies well or something. I don't know where I'm going with that.
It hides the pill.
Horrible. Can we do one show on Neo's ads without ripping on poor Bill Cosby?
No.
No. Okay.
Doesn't seem like it.
Now at this point, Peter takes, Venkman takes this case pretty much for all the wrong reasons. He has, oh, I'm sure he wants to help her, but because if he helps her, he will probably get a something out of it, if you know what I mean. So he certainly takes this case for all the wrong reasons, which is just a great character trait for Peter Venkman. And
even as he walks in the room and he goes, "That's right, it's Peter Venkman." How he says that, I go, I laugh.
Oh, that is another. I don't have many quotes, but the scene of him trying to torture the ghost with the piano keys is something I remembered right away. I mean, I knew as soon as he opened up the piano thing, I'm sitting there going, "They hate this, drives him crazy." I was like, I knew the line was coming, and I had not seen this in so long.
And he said, and it like out loud.
Print is dead. That's something every time I walk by a piano, I have to do.
Nice.
They hate this. I love it.
So they're back at the firehouse. They're having a little bit of a celebration. They're having, what are they having? Chinese food?
Yeah.
With the last of the petty cash.
Last of the petty cash, correct. But this is the lead. This is one Chris quoted. This is when Janine takes a phone call and hangs up with another memorable scene. In fact, this is one of those scenes that when I watch one of those, when we talked about it earlier, those shows that do retrospectives of the Grady's, when Ghostbuster comes up, there's always inevitably three scenes. One, Dan Aykroyd with a cigarette hanging from his mouth.
Yeah.
Two, love that one. Peter Venkman saying he's slimy. And three, Janine screaming, "We got one." And that's what usually actually launches a montage in these things. This is always referred to when talking about this movie.
I want to hear Chrissy say it. Exactly. I want her to scream it and say it.
"We got one!"
That's pretty good.
And as if it was an introduction with that, we now see the real Ecto-1, which is, that is, I, movie cars, I'm not a car guy, but I am a movie car guy in a sense. I mean, I'm not one of those that go out and buy a car and make one look like it, but
good.
Love the Back to the Future car. Generally, and this is right up there with them, Ecto-1 is just one of the all-time classics for me. I see that car and go, that is awesome. I love that thing. And I think a lot of it has to do with the sound, the unique sound the alarm makes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the look of it, the white and the red and the blue. I just could go on and on, but yeah.
I read somewhere that the sound is a combination of a couple of jungle cats that they kind of
jungle
glued the sounds together.
Who's on the set? Ben Burt? What's going on there, you know?
So, yeah, right. And a screaming child, because Ben Burt always uses a screaming child. And then this leads to another, just remember, I mean, this scene is, this movie to me is just a sequence of incredibly great and memorable and influential scenes to me. And it's the chasing now called Slimer, but I don't think he was named as Slimer till well after the fact. Slimer through the hotel.
I don't think he was named. Was he named Slimer in the second movie?
They named him Slimer in the cartoon.
Yeah, I remember that, because he was practically a regular character in the cartoon.
Yeah, he was Onionhead.
Onionhead,
during the movie, because he stunk.
Oh, really?
They had like a puppet to that extent.
Get the fuck out, really?
Well, I think for some of the scenes, they had to use some kind of I saw a picture of a little person climbing inside of one.
Oh, was it?
I was shots.
I was being sarcastic. Now I'm even more surprised by that fact. Wow. Okay. Well, this introduces us to something that ever since I saw it, I loved it. Still love it today. Wish it was real. And just by it's, I think it might be neck and neck of my wish list of movie items that are real with a lightsaber, and that is the proton pack.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was one of the greatest things in a movie ever, just the idea of it. Because it's basically, I mean, it's a modern time earthbound lightsaber in a sense to me, I guess, but I just, I love the look of it, and I think, and most of all, this time around, didn't really occur to me going into the movie until listening to it, the sound design they did for these things is awesome. Yeah,
the power up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the noise it makes when it's fired and as it's firing, kind of that like wavy electric-ish sound is the best I can describe it, but I'm not doing a very good job. Just the whole sound of that thing
is awesome, and I never really appreciated it until this watching of it.
Did you notice that the first time they turn it on, Egon and Peter just start backing away?
Yep. In the elevator? Yeah.
Like, they're going to get far.
Right, I know, but still, the idea is just great. And then
it should be a mile in that situation.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, watching this scene, I am now laughing ahead of things that are about to happen, and it's this move, this scene itself is just, I'd never stopped watching this. It was so memorable and still so much fun to watch. And we get to the scene where he slimed me scene. Now that is a quoted and a scene that's shown a lot when talking about Ghostbusters. But I really think the bigger laugh after that is the like almost throwaway line. You almost don't hear, but you do get to hear it when he says, "I feel so funky."
He slimed me.
Yeah, that's the one. And then Egon calls to get some of that, to scoop up some of that slime save it for later. Yeah,
that's great. Save me some for later. He actually, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is Egon's when he's walking down the hallway and he starts scanning the older gentleman, and then he just ever so slightly pokes him to see if he's real.
Yep.
Yeah.
So now they follow the ghost into the main banquet room or whatever its official name is, and they start to fire at it, and we get the warning of don't cross the streams. Yes. And I started to write this down and just didn't have enough time. So does anyone have a brief explanation of why we shouldn't cross the streams?
Yes, actually, I saw that.
See, I thought this is something Derek could recite.
I thought there's
a big long explanation. I was going to write it down too, but the short version is everything would explode and we would all die.
Yep, total photon reversal.
Which I guess apparently we'd be sucked into, they would be sucked into whatever universe is on the other side or something.
Okay. There, I had the total photon reversal, but did not have that part. That makes sense. That actually makes more sense.
And that makes sense.
Photon reversal to me would be that photons would separate rather than conjoin, but where would they'd have to go somewhere? So going into another dimension, to me, at least there's an end point. Otherwise, the photons would just keep going, and I don't know. I got a headache now.
There's that awesome quote scene too that I know we've all said it, and the flowers are still standing.
Did anyone say that out loud during the movie?
Oh yeah, did you say it?
I have to say that this is almost as annoying as watching Star Wars with him.
Whoa! Nice shooting, Tex.
Revenge of the Nerds is somebody else.
That's true.
That's right.
Very good.
Shut
point,
up, Derek.
Thank you.
This will be my last appearance.
No.
Very quotable scene.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
That's right, and it ends with a great quote as well.
That's a great quote. Yeah. You know
that, and them pricing out how much it was. It was going to cost. He keeps looking over at Egon. Egon's doing his little
finger movements. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Just making it up as they go along. You know.
And another great prop was introduced in this scene, which fits with everything else we saw, and I think just as cool and looks just as fits in with everything they've done, and that's the ghost trap. I love that little thing.
I don't understand what it's plugged into.
The foot control, so they can stand away from it.
Okay, because I was like, where does the cord go?
Back when I first started in tech and was doing all the computer deployments and whatnot, and I'd have to take those battery backups, which you've probably seen and may even have, when I would take dead ones out, I would always hold it by the cord, and I'm always thinking in my head that it's a Ghostbuster trap in my hand.
Are you ever like running down a hall and they're like, get away, get back, and it's like smoking or no?
If it's smoking, I won't be holding it because that battery's going to explode.
True.
Oh, was I smoking, you mean? Most likely.
No, okay. The boss was smoking.
There's a good chance I was smoking doing that back in the day, but...
True.
I'm not sure. Thanks. True. You did smoke like a chimney.
You smoked a lot. I remember that.
That's true, yeah. Anyway, this is not smoking. This is not cigarette smoking man in character.
That's our next podcast about X-Files. The X-Files.
So we get
after this, we get a much needed montage if we want to move the story along, and we see their slew of successes one after another. And this is a very interesting way to tell it. Telling it through news headlines, which start off kind of in the progression of how your fame would progress in the 80s and much today, although you got to throw a lot of internet in now. But to start with local newspapers, you get to local magazines, you go to radio, which I forgot Larry King started in radio. To see Larry King behind the mic, I'm like, oh shit, that's right, he was in radio.
And he looked fat. Like he had a fat face and a fat neck going on there.
You only saw the back of his head.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't recall, but I'll take your word for it.
And he wasn't 100 at the time either.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Yeah.
I think that's why I always see Larry so King
probably
as 100.
His average weight back then.
Yeah. I always see him old as, you know, 110 years old on Conan O'Brien. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yep.
But
yeah.
He still had his suspenders on.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
But Casey Kasem, television coverage. And then we get into the. One of the best lines in that montage: no job is too big, no fee is too big. And then in that montage, it has to be Chris's favorite scene.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh, well, you know what's weird is I actually had to fast forward that scene.
Oh, we were watching with Luke.
Luke, yeah, oh. Yeah. And I remember Derek when we saw it at the theater, and I had to like hide his eyes.
Oh yeah,
remember that? Because he probably has no idea what's going on, but he knows that is the don't touch area.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Oh,
yeah. You know what
gotcha.
I mean? And I love it, and the belts and buttons. I mean, that's the scene where I love to watch, but I didn't see it a couple nights ago. and Luke's like he's on his phone or something. He's playing a game on the phone. And then I fast forward, and then his eyes go up. He's like, why are you fast forwarding? You know, oh, I don't know. that's my reason. I don't know.
It slipped. Oops. Well, no sense in going back. Let's just watch from here.
Exactly. So, I know the scene.
And he's dressed like a sea captain or something during that whole scene.
Who is he?
You mean? Yeah, Chris is.
Oh, Chris
in the movie dressed as a sea captain. No, Ray, in that scene, if you look at that scene, he's wearing some big, you know, like jacket with like these big lapels.
I did not notice that.
I never noticed that either. Yeah. I got to watch that again for the 810th time. All right.
But you got to fast forward it.
Wakes up by falling out of bed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Trying to see if I don't even know how to describe this on Google without seeing results I don't want to see. Oh,
Ray,
actually, it worked.
Ray stands ghost blowjob.
The pictures aren't very good, though. I can't tell because he's kind of... They're showing his face like when his eyes are rolling back. So, I'll have to check that out. I'll certainly take your word for it, Derek. You do know this movie much better than I do.
I'm a boat captain.
He's a boat captain. Like, what are you?
I'm a boat captain.
What are you? What's his name from The Soup?
Hugh Hefner.
So, now... After this, we meet our final Ghostbuster, Winston Zeddemore, who is the character, I shit you not, this one character out of all the Ghostbusters is owned by, of all things, specifically Universal Studios Orlando,
woo!
The theme park.
Yes, yes, we do. Huh.
So if they ever want to put Winston in a movie again, they got to go through Universal Studios Orlando.
Yep.
How weird is that? Is that just a random thing to own or what?
The Winston
show. That is weird.
Yeah.
He is the bridge between the audience and them. He is asking.
He's the everyman.
Yeah, he's the everyman. He will be asking the questions that tell us the story we need to know without having the story in a very odd exposition scene. So it's a good character to have.
Right.
Well, I think he says it best in the interview process when he says to Janine, hey, as long as there's a steady paycheck, I'll believe whatever you tell me.
That's right. Yeah.
He gets hired too, like on the spot. No questions asked. You're hired, like, immediately.
Well, that's after, I mean, yeah, that's going to be, I guess you'd have to use your imagination. If there was Ghostbusters in real life and being successful, they'd be overrun with people wanting a job. But in this universe, this particular universe, this storytelling, people are very skeptical and don't know what to think of it. So they are busy. We find out why they're busy later. They finally have a warm body that looks like he's got some sense to him,
and he wants
the job. They're not going to let him. Ray's not going to let him get away. He needs that extra hand now. So that's how I always took that scene.
True.
That is true. That's how I took it. That's why I said that.
Did you ever notice that Sigourney Weaver, when she's acting on in a scene with someone, she tends to avoid eye contact with that person? Oh,
no, I did not notice.
I was noticing that in her scenes with Bill Murray, she doesn't really make eye contact.
Like, and maybe she was having a hard time not laughing.
Probably. Yeah, that's the only thing. I was like, wow, she's really not. Like the whole thing outside the concert hall and stuff, I noticed she doesn't really make contact. And then when they're in the apartment, she does not make eye contact with them very often.
Did not notice that. Now I won't be able to not see it next time I watch this.
And she's really not. She's not that hot or attractive, but there's something about her that makes her cute.
Oh, I still don't. I mean, we had this discussion with Aliens. I don't find her attractive. Don't get me wrong. I like her. I like her a lot. I like a lot of her movies, and I think she's a very good actress, and very, like I said, in a lot of movies that I grew up with, and I like her. I like her a lot. Do not find her attractive. Never have.
Wooden boner.
Nope. So we learn now through Venkman studying Dana's case, speaking of Sigourney Weaver, we learn the history of Zool and Gozer and kind of where this story is going. Then from there, I jumped to the ghost storage facility. I guess that was just some exposition. We don't really need to talk about this story because everyone knows it, but the ghost storage facility, I do have a note. I did not understand the explanation of what happens when Ray empties a trap in 1984. All these years later, I still don't understand.
Where do they go?
I don't need to, I guess, but I still don't I thought maybe after all these years, being a little older and actually knowing the pseudoscience behind it a little better, I might understand it. Nope. Don't get how this thing works.
Like, how big is that? Is the holder the other
right? Where does that go? Yeah,
yeah, and the other side of the wall. Like, how big is that?
I don't know. I still don't get how this thing works. And you don't need to. You just need to know there's a shit ton of ghosts in there for later.
And there's an on-off switch. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, if it's that complicated, should have a little more than that. Should have a little more redundancy. So after we learn about the storage facility, the EPA starts to get involved, and we meet another famous character, Walter Peck.
Walter Peck.
Played by William Atherton, who I asked Christy this question, and I ask you guys the same question. Has this actor ever played a likable character?
Not that I know of, and I heard a rumor that he was like harassed and like yelled at or whatnot. Really, in real life, because of the roles of Ghostbusters and Die Hard, because he's a dick.
I immediately think of him from Die Hard. I don't know if either of you guys watch Defiance now, but he plays an asshole in that too.
Mm-hmm. No. God.
I've never seen him play a likable character.
I read somewhere that he was actually getting harassed in New York, but I met him a few years back at one of the conventions, and I told him a story. When I was in third grade, there was a young girl in that class who was his niece.
Oh, wow.
And she came into school one day and was, you know, had pictures and all kinds of stuff and told everybody, "Oh, he's my uncle." And we harassed her. Now, granted, we were third grade. But yes. We gave her a hard time because her uncle caused all the ghosts to come out.
Oh, you bastard.
Well, that's pretty much what he told me, you know, when I was 32, when I saw him and I told him this story, thinking, "Oh, this is a lighthearted story. He'll think it's funny." He's, "Why would you do that? Why would you do that? You were six. You let the ghosts out. So, you were the bad guy."
Not entertained, was he, by that story?
No, he didn't seem very entertained by the massive amount of people that didn't like it.
Well, duh. Yeah, I would. Yeah, I can that I can understand. Yeah.
Which goes to show you how great of an actor he really is. Yeah.
Unless he's just a dick in general and he's just being himself.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I've never met him. I can't say he's a nice guy or not a nice guy, but it's kind of got to suck to... Well, on one hand, I mean, acting's hard. Getting jobs and being a recognized actor is hard. So I feel bad that he plays this character, but finding a niche that you can almost always count on having work isn't so bad either.
I just read something that was notes from the DVD commentary. And there was a story where Ivan Reitman recalled running into William Atherton about a year after Ghostbusters came out, instead of warmly greeting Reitman, Atherton was genuinely pissed off, telling the director he couldn't even go into a bar without people wanting to pick a fight with him. People would scream at him in public.
Oh, man.
And
Ramis.
Yeah,
right. And Ramis recalls Derek. Atherton telling him about a time when he was walking in downtown New York and a bus of tourists yelled dickless at him.
He also recalled the story of meeting someone at a convention that told him a terrible, terrible story involving his niece.
Way good, Derek.
He seemed like a really nice guy, but yeah, you could definitely tell that he was pretty bitter. And I'm sure it wasn't just from Ghostbusters. Like you said, Die Hard. He was a jerk in Die Hard, too.
I don't see any of these roles on here. Oh, that's right. He saved a busload of kids in this movie. There's none of that point jump out at me in this. Poor guy. Anyway, so now, another note I have here, and this is all in the same scene, or the same sequence, the Twinkie analogy.
Oh, yeah.
I had never quite understood this Twinkie analogy until hearing it this time. I don't know what... why this was different. Maybe I have a better understanding of math and like scale and exponential numbers or whatnot, but I always just like, okay, I was Winston back in 1984. That's a big Twinkie. Okay. That's a big Twinkie. Don't understand what that means, but this time I did. So I was very happy to finally figure out a statistical or exponential joke 30 years later.
It's like it's a grenade joke.
What?
Throw it and wait for it to hit.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
But what's weird too, I think Derek knows this, when Harold Ramis passed and all at the firehouse in New York where they filmed there was all Twinkies. Oh,
they left boxes and boxes of them there.
Well, let's mention that just out of respect for him. This is the day, am I correct, Derek? This is the day after his 1 year anniversary of his passing, is it not?
Yeah, it was a year ago yesterday.
Yeah, so, and then there was some news clips on the blogs I read, and I bet, I'm willing to bet the ones Derek reads as well, were mentioning that. That's how I remember it. And they were showing visuals of that, and there was a lot of things left at the firehouse, Twinkies included, and man, I've always liked Harold Ramis in everything he had his hands in, especially SCTV. I was a huge SCTV fan back in the day and still have the DVD sets that I pulled every once in a while. I usually don't get emotional or any kind of reaction from a celebrity passing. There's the initial awe and then I'm over it. But the Harold Ramis one did upset me for the day. I have to admit that was a little heart wrenching.
Derek had a little bit of a argument with my wife yesterday. It was not today, Kelly. Not today.
No.
Yes, Kelly is notoriously a hater of this film.
Oh yeah, I think we're gonna get into that in our top five, aren't we, Chris?
Yes, we are.
All right, we'll save that conversation. All right, back to the movie. Didn't mean to derail with someone's death, but I didn't have a note about it, so I wanted to make sure I got it in my respects in there. The demon dog statues start to come to life. Now this is watchable. But that's about as far as I can go on this special effect. I think, I'm talking about the claw breaking through the cement.
Yeah.
And I think this could still be done as a practical effect, but better today than back then.
It still wasn't bad.
It wasn't the worst devil dog thing. We'll get to that.
She's a dog.
But I guess my point was in my notes here is that we're back at the building and we get to Dana trying to sneak past Lewis's apartment when he's having a party. And what an awesome party this sounds like with Twister and breakdancing.
Yeah. And the hot chick he's dancing with.
That was
Gene Kasem. Yeah, I know. I was shocked.
Hi, gang from Cheers.
Yeah, right. Oh, God. I forgot she was in that. That was Nick Tortelli's wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
They were in the Tortellis.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that existed, too. And I know, Chris, you saw Nick Tortelli screaming at someone on the phone in New York City, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Banging the phone, banging the phone down on the fucking thing, yeah.
Cheers in character. Come on. Yeah. That party scene, man. That scene, right then and there, demonstrated the talent that I love that Rick Moranis has.
Yeah.
And then later I find out, like a day later, that scene was improvised. Does anyone else read that, or is that...
Yeah, they said that he entirely improvised that whole scene.
That is amazing. That is, because that is, yeah, there's so much happening in that scene just from between the accounting jokes, the boring accounting jokes to the Canadian salmon, which
Could be, I guess, kind of a little bit of an inside joke if you don't know Rick Moranis is Canadian. But I mean, besides that, just that his delivery and his timing and his flow in that is so awesome. And to find out it was an improvise on top of all that is just blows me away.
Who brought the dog? I love that line.
Brought the dog. Yeah,
I love that line.
Plus, that's where I learned all my dance moves. So.
I would love to see that. And even funnier to know, knowing a little bit how film works, I'm 99.9% sure there was no, in fact, I know there was no music playing in that scene. So the fact that he's just dancing to nothing at that beat was just made that scene even funnier. And now over in Dana, I do want Chris's opinion on this. Over in Dana's apartment, she's tired, sits down in her chair, and these hands start to tear out of the chair. And
the hand grabs a boob.
Yeah, where's the first hand go, Chris?
I've noticed that immediately. And I noticed like she actually grabs it, like trying to like, hey, you're on my boob kind of thing. You know what I mean? Yeah, I saw that too. Immediately right on the boob. I mean, I'll be honest. If I was some kind of demon dog, I would do the same thing.
Boobs.
You don't have to be a demon dog. You'd still do the same thing.
You can just be a dog.
I knew that was coming after the dog word was out there. I would grab it all the time. But what's weird is that is the part where she gets possessed. That's another line I say in my whole life. Whenever Kel and I are talking about something, I always say, is this just a trick question? I always say that. Right? I always quote Bill Murray. Bill Murray raised me.
Yeah, oh, God. Oh, Lord, help us. We have some scenes with the dogs here, and I don't want to belabor this because there's some terrible CGI.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. This is probably the worst CGI in the movie.
They don't have shadows.
Yeah. And there's a matte line that just is basically giving it a glow. I mean, it's 1984. It's a comedy, but it's bad.
It is bad.
If they were going to spruce it, I was going to special editionalize it, but please don't do that. If they were going to go back and do some serious remastering, that's something that I think would be worth the time and attention to fix, because it just stands out really poorly. So now Dana, possessed by Zool, she's preparing for Gozer the Destructor's arrival. Another famous line, which I say when I get something caught in my throat: there is no Dana, only Zool.
And when she raises up, I don't see a pole, I don't see wire, I don't see anything.
You know, she, Ivan Reitman actually used to work with Doug Henning, and they actually did that as a practical effect. There's no post on that.
Well, they did. I noticed, and this kind of, I don't know why this stood out to me, but it seemed like Bill Murray was actually, as subtly as he could, going through the motions that a magician would go through to show you that there's nothing underneath her and there's nothing above her. Did you guys notice that, or is that?
He definitely did the hand wave move and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It did look like a magic trick. I'm like,
the world of illusion.
Yeah.
He should have just waved his fingers over top of her just to get the point home.
Men talk. Dana's not the only one possessed. Lewis is possessed as well. He is the gatekeeper, which a name I forgot.
Portho.
Portho, is that it?
Vince Galortho.
So he gets caught, but he is actually running around the city. Yeah. Talking to horses. Awesome scene.
That scene where he's at Tavern on the Green, and this is something I didn't know until yesterday, just doing some research. Debbie Gibson is the little girl having the birthday party.
Really?
Yeah, and you'd have no idea, unless you knew what Debbie Gibson looked like when she was 10.
No, yeah, of course.
But
maybe I do, maybe I don't.
What?
Only in his dreams.
Oh! As real as it may seem.
Just having him, this is like the Winston scene, or scenes with Winston, where you get the, Winston is there to ask questions, so you get the story. Having Lewis possessed and looking for the gatekeeper is another way to tell that side of the story, because he's running around asking questions about the gatekeeper and then talking to the horse. It's like, okay, now I know why him and Dana have to come together, and another great storytelling device by having Lewis possessed and not in the building when it happens.
And when he's possessed and Egon has that TV of the dog.
Oh, that is such a great shot. I mean, even though the dog isn't quite moving the way he is, it's still so, the idea is so cool.
That's one of those shots I remember from even when I was a little kid thinking that's like the craziest thing.
Yep.
You know, oh, there's his head and there he is. It's a dog.
Yep.
you know, when your kids see that, that's crazy.
Right.
Now it's just, like you said, you know, you can tell that it's not moving the same. It's just, you kind of just have to laugh.
Right. But the idea is still great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's another cosplay for you. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people walk around with the strainer on their head.
Yep. That is a great starting point, I guess, if you want to get into one of these Ghostbuster guilds or whatever they are that I see at every convention we go to. That section, give me an idea. I'm a little too tall, though. No, I'm not going to dress up as Lewis.
No.
You're going to dress up as Janine now. I'm going to dress you up as Janine from Ghostbusters 2.
I have the glasses.
Yeah, it's true. So now back at the Ghostbusters headquarters, they are... Oh, actually, there's a scene I don't remember at all. I'm going to go... I don't think it's because it was in this particular edition. I just don't remember this. The Ray and... Winston conversation about Judgment Day in the car.
Yeah,
the Bible talk.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all. But it's actually, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, it could have it, keep it or leave it, but it's another piece of this whole Armageddon story that we're building up to that is important or could be told. I don't know why I don't have any recollection of this whatsoever. I don't know if it's because it's so short or if it's because there's no special effects on it or what, but I don't remember that scene at all. But the EPA does arrive at the Ghostbusters building.
This movie hates you, makes you hate the EPA.
Yeah, well, this in the Simpsons movie.
EPA!
EPA arrives with a cease and desist order and a inspection order, somehow, and a couple other things. Whatever they have gives Walter Peck the authority to shut off the storage grid, which they do. Storage grid blows. Huge, huge... paranormal Armageddon light hole shoots through the top of the fire station, and somehow miraculously police barricades are already up. I'm not sure how that happened.
Ron Jeremy's behind them.
Yes, and Ron Jeremy's there.
With his big old afro.
Yeah.
And big old cock.
Oh boy.
One of my favorite creatures though is the zombie taxicab driver.
I'm so glad you said that, because there's somebody on this show that had iPad up to their face so that she couldn't see it, and since there's only one she on the show, I think we know who that is.
Chris.
So this is your poltergeist lady.
Yeah,
she couldn't look at it.
I can't watch it. I, for some reason, that scene when I was a kid freaked me out, and I still can't bring myself to watch it, even though I've like at work I've seen it several times, and I still can't watch it.
And it's so like Walking Dead is on now, and this is that zombie on Ghostbusters. You could put that zombie in the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
It's that really cool, like how the head turns and turns down the fair thingy. Yeah. it's really cool. One of the greatest like creatures. I wonder if Stan Winston made that. I don't know either.
It's definitely one of the more realistic ones in that whole montage.
And I'm glad you said that. I like this montage for what it is. It's you know, part of the story. Some of the puppets or whatever they are, the suits or whatnot. Now, the effect is still good. I still like that Peter's ghost effect that they're doing to show the ghost. But, I mean, the puppets, the costumes, whatnot, some don't quite hold up, but... And this may or may not be, this may be hypocritical on things I've been harsh on in the past on this show, but I'm letting this slide because this is a comedy. This is a comedy about ghost hunting. Now, if this was a pure sci-fi, a very serious sci-fi thriller about hunting ghosts, it would not be acceptable. But considering it's a comedy, I'm letting it slide and it's not bothering me. What do you guys think?
It's not bothering me at all either. I'm just loving every little detail. And every green dot went over here. I wanted to know what it was.
Okay.
No, I definitely loved it. Like, especially the ghost that's coming through the big archway.
Yes, yeah.
In the one scene. I mean, it's cheesy as hell, but it's always fun.
Right.
But it's funny that you say about the horror film, because going back to the library, they had another ghost set up to be the librarian ghost, and they decided it was too scary.
Oh, wow.
And then they ended up, I honestly can't remember the name of the film, but they ended up using it in a horror film like a couple years later.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I gotta look that. I'd love to see what that looked like. I have to look that up.
I was just reading some interesting facts about Ghostbusters. That part of the reason it's about ghostbusting is that Dan Aykroyd has a great grandfather who was a psychic investigator.
Oh, really?
Wow!
I know Dan Aykroyd has an interest in many things. I don't know how you would say. I don't want to find the wrong word and insult the guy, but interest of this nature.
Didn't he at one point host a show similar to the one that Bakeman hosts?
Yes, you're right. Ghostbusters 2? He did. Yes, yeah.
Like, I actually wonder if he wrote any of this, like, back on SNL, you know, maybe on the stage or something. What if he just sat in a room and just wrote some shit about Ghostbusters back in the day? Mm-hmm. You know? That'd be awesome to have that clipboard.
His composition book, College Ruled.
It'll just read, we fight ghosts, and then Bakeman says something funny.
yeah, exactly. And Bill Murray is himself. Yeah, I mean, Bill Murray is. I love him, Kelly. No matter what you say.
Oh, she doesn't like Bill Murray.
She hates Bill. She likes two movies of his: Caddyshack and Stripes.
Stripes is a good movie. We'll do on this show one day.
That's yeah. Oh yeah. That's actually my whenever. That's my next choice. I'll tell you now.
So. Yeah,
We have PJ Souls coming to the next show.
Yeah, that was the blonde, right?
Yeah,
she was in Rock and Roll High School too.
Yes, she was.
Yeah. Derek, calm down.
One of the last living cast members of Rock and Roll High School.
Seeing as I'm staring at my album of Rock and Roll High School now with her signature on it. Oh, cool. So.
I'm a huge Ramones fan. I love that movie.
Yeah, I got Marky on there too.
Oh, nice. Yeah. All right, now at this, the EPA shuts down all this stuff, releases all this ghost, and throws the Ghostbusters in jail. And they do a great scene. Again, now this is a pure exposition scene, them talking about the design of the building.
How do they get the blueprints in there?
I know, it's exposition. It's like, it's all the things I hate. It's exposition. It has unexplained props. Many unexplained questions, but I'm loving it because the fact that the more they're talking, the more the rest of the inmates are getting involved in the story.
and they're like leaning into every little word everyone saying. Yeah,
it's like it's
everybody getting this.
Exactly. Yeah, I love it. I mean, when they wrote this out, and I think Ivan Reitman had to have had a lot to do with this. It's like this scene. This has to be told. It's a major story port. It's very boring. It's very exposition. But we need to keep the audience involved, and they did a. Awesome job. I was laughing more and more the more the scene went on. The more that they would close in, the harder I was laughing. And I think Christy was looking at me like, what is my problem? I'm like, this is brilliant storytelling.
It was just the usual look.
Oh, okay. That's true.
So be good, for goodness sake. Bill, whoa.
That's right. It's not an 80s movie if Bill Murray does not do some lounge singing.
He has to sing something, yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Jaws! Oh, that was great.
And you get your second Die Hard connection in the scene.
Yes! I said that too. I got way too excited when I realized who that was.
He's a cop in everything he's in. Yeah,
every single thing he's ever done.
And kept saying the Urkel. I said Die Hard 2 in the Urkel show, or Die Hard in the Urkel show. Like, what the hell's that show's name? I could not think of it. Family Matters?
Yeah.
I couldn't think of it last night. I kept saying the Urkel show.
But he is on a show, which I probably, we watch, Heart of Dixie.
Okay. Oh, I don't even know what that is.
He does not play a cop.
Really?
Yes. I just thought of that.
I'm stunned.
Does he play a security guard?
He does not. He has a cane, and he's always at some diner eating. But no, he's not playing a cop.
Well, all right then. Good for him for breaking out of that mold.
Maybe he's retired.
I almost said, is he a retired cop? Yes. Does he do online security? It's kind of the same thing.
He's Paul Blart. No, I don't know.
Paul Blart. So the mayor takes a meeting with the Ghostbusters and William Peck. And yes. One of the lines that I thought was like, I thought I was, when I heard this at 12 years old, I thought I was like bordering on adult because I actually got the joke, which Chris, you've already played, so you must know what I'm talking about.
I remember hearing the whole Dick thing, right?
Yeah, the whole thing where they said Dickless here opened it up and then Bill Murray says that line. I was like, that is, I'm thinking at 12 years old, that's adult comedy and I got it. I'm growing up.
Well, that's the thing. How many times? True.
This man has no dick.
How many times did have a 12-year-old, 11-year-old heard the word dick? Probably
that's
never.
True too. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Probably not a word that you say during the time of your dinner. You know what I mean?
No,
have they eaten dinner with you, Chris?
I said, pass the salt, pass the dick.
Oh, no, you beat me to it. I was going to say, please pass the dick.
He says that to me every time we go to the movies.
I do.
You drive up the car, strange cars. Excuse me, do you have any gray poo dick?
And Derek goes, but of course.
And hangs it out the window.
There you go. And then I pet it.
Oh, God. You don't spread it on something?
On my aunt? No, I don't.
Oh, no.
Where are we going with this? Yes, but yeah, you're right. The word dick was never heard at that age, and it's just Bill Murray says it so perfectly.
Yes. Yep. The joke, I was not expecting that joke then, and it holds
now,
up.
Now, I don't know politics, seriously, but was that the real mayor back in the day?
No.
No,
he was an actor.
No.
Okay.
I recognized him as an actor.
Okay. It may have been
Ed Koch back then.
Yeah, I think it was.
But doesn't Ed Koch make an appearance in the second one?
I think he does, actually. I think you're right. No, but that was not the real mayor.
Okay.
So we get the argument between the two. Winston speaks up as every man, as Christy pointed out, and then we get the whole everyone pitching in a fevered pitch, and we get probably the fourth most played line in 80s retrospectives, which is human sacrifices, dogs and cats living together.
Favorite line.
Yep. That's the only one Christy
remembered.
Recited.
Oh.
Winston's line's one that I've said way too many times for being as pale as I am though.
What's that?
He says, I've seen shit that'll turn you white.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's right. I forgot that line. That's a good line. That's one of those ones that gets funnier the older you get when you realize he's saying it to probably one of the whitest guys in a room, the mayor.
Yeah, and then they shoot over to the cops and they're all rolling their eyes.
Yep. So now the Ghostbusters win the argument. The mayor asks what they need and the military is mobilized. Ghostbusters are escorted by the police to Dana's building. Yes. And I had this note. Did anyone else notice the incredibly excited Ginger in the crowd? Ginger gentleman.
Yes.
Oh, thank God. I was the only one that noticed. That guy was going nuts.
There was people like so excited to be in the background shots of this movie.
And then this is a cool looking scene when they get to the building and the ground starts to shake and swallows them up.
Right.
But what was the point of that? I mean, if you took that out of the movie, there would be no change to that movie whatsoever. I think it was one of those things where it's like they could do it, so they did it.
But they're trying to actually kill them? Like, was the ghost trying?
I guess, but that's the thing. They weren't even hurt.
No, but I think for the first time ever, though, when they all fell in the hole, I saw one guy was a definite stuntman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah, there's a couple of shots where you can just clearly see it's not one of them.
Yeah, I don't quite understand the point of this scene, and I have to honestly say this is the only scene out of this whole movie that I went, we didn't need this. Everything else needed to stay in. This one was like, I don't know why we're watching this.
It goes to show you that you cannot kill a Ghostbuster.
I guess, okay.
I think maybe it had something to do with the fact that the crowd outside wasn't going to be able to see what was going on up top, so they wanted to show what kind of danger they were going to have to be in at the bottom.
Ooh. Okay. That's not bad.
I'm thinking too much about it.
No, that's good. I mean, you could be. That's very possible, but I like that. I'll buy that. That beats my they could do it, so they did it theory.
I want to hear my favorite line probably in the whole movie. To hear what someone say when they not all the steps we all up there and they get to the top and they look over to the left and Ray goes, where do these steps go? And what's Peter say, Derek?
They go up.
Yep.
That's so funny because they do. I love that line. I just love that line. Like, where do these steps go? They go up. Yep.
Well,
and then he makes them all go up before him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yep. Let's go. Let's follow him up the steps. So we go up the steps, and now we see the demon dogs, or we see Dana and Lewis turn into the demon dogs. Correct? I don't have that exact note, but I think that's what happens.
So. Yeah.
And we meet Gozer finally, which
it was almost Pee-wee. I heard.
Yeah, it was almost Paul Rubens.
not.
I saw some great scenes that they had, some sketches they had, where instead of having her in the middle, they actually had him in the suit and everything.
Oh my God, really?
Like from Pee Wee's Playhouse, yeah.
Oh, I gotcha, okay. Oh, and then one of the famous there's so many lines here, but this is they're famous lines. There's no other way to say them. When Gozer asks the infamous question, "Are you a god?" and Ray says, "No."
And he's being honest.
They're punished.
Yeah, they are.
And probably the only apart from the shit that'll turn you white, the only quotable Winston line for me in this whole movie: when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes.
That's right.
So now we got kind of the shootout, a little bit of a shootout. The Gozer's flying through the air, doing all kinds of crazy flips and stuff while they're trying to shoot at her. And they miss her. She kind of disappears. And now we get to what was probably, if you ask just any casual Ghostbuster, any moviegoer, tell me something about Ghostbusters, I think 9 times out of 10, you're going to hear about what we're about to talk about.
Agreed.
This is where Gozer says, choose the form of your destructor. Vinkman explained, they figure out what's going on. Vinkman tells everyone to clear their heads. Gozer announced that the Traveler has been chosen, and we hear some giant footsteps. We hear some screams off in the distance. Ray explains, he couldn't help it. It's the first thing that popped into his head. The one thing from his childhood that could never harm him. It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, as he says.
You know what's weird, too, is like, I think when I saw with Derek at the theater a couple months ago, I saw for the first time ever a billboard when the camera panned over New York or something. Yeah. You saw a billboard of a Stay Puft.
Stay Puft, yep.
Yeah, for Mr. Stay Puft.
Yeah, I never noticed that ever until a couple months ago.
Brilliant. This is absolutely brilliant. I mean, the joke is great. He has no powers. He's just big and angry. He's Godzilla. He's a big squishy Godzilla. He's destroying stuff.
Squishzilla.
Yeah, right. He's awesome. I love this bit. This was great. They give him a quick shot in the chest, and of course he's a marshmallow, so all it really does is burn him. So he starts climbing the building, King Kong style.
Yeah.
And again, I think my memory of this is much more elaborate than what happens, because the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man isn't in it as much as my memory says he's in it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It does. It's a big part of the movie. My Caitlin always, like, every time he turned the corner and made that face, she's like, "Aww,
yeah, right."
Like, he's so adorably cute coming down to, like, kill you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Anyone ever have the Stay Puft Marshmallows Think Geek was selling? They're caffeinated marshmallows. No. Me neither.
No.
I wanted to get some, but by the time I found out about them, they were on second market and they were way too expensive. So Egon has an idea how to put an end to all this. The door swings both ways, so crossing the stream should reverse what the door does, sending the door back into the dimension, as was explained better by Derek earlier in the episode. So they try it, and it works. And it ends with a horrific explosion on the roof that I can't explain how they survived.
Yeah. Well, the marshmallow.
I guess, yeah, maybe. That could be, yeah.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, Bill Murray has nothing on him. He's a little stain on his left hand or something.
I love that, because that is another character moment where it's like he managed to guard himself before completely helping anybody else.
Yeah, they're all covered. He's like, comes over with a little patch on his face, and that's it, you know?
Yep. Melted marshmallow everywhere. Dana and Lewis break out of the demon dog shells. They're safe. Winston ends with the line, which I didn't realize Winston had the last line in this movie until I actually looked to see what the last line was. It was, "I love this town." And then we go to credits.
Great. And you get the Dick guy gets all the marshmallows poured on top of him.
Yeah, that's right.
I heard it hurt. Like,
oh, really?
It was so much like shaving cream, I think it was. Yeah.
And it was menthol.
Yeah, shaving foam. They said they tried it with Mallow first on the stunt guy and it knocked him clear on his ass. Ooh. So they had to switch it.
Oh, yeah. I guess marshmallow probably is a lot more denser than shaving cream. I didn't really think of that.
And they use menthol.
Menthol. Ooh.
Like, people had allergic reactions to it.
Oh, that's fun. So before we get into the final rating, I just want to touch on some of the stuff that this has spawned, because it has spawned a lot of stuff. There was the cartoon. There's a sequel, of course. Let's start there. There was a cartoon, The Real Ghostbusters. There was a toy line for that. There is a costume club that we talked about, which is, I can see doing mainly for the props. I mean, I still wouldn't, it's still not cool enough. Cool, not that I'm any expert on cool, but it's still not attractive enough to me to do a full costume. But I could see getting into trying to make those props because they seem achievable.
Of all people could do that, seriously.
Yeah, I could make the props. I wouldn't make the costume and dress up, but I could see that. The props are awesome. I love the props in this movie. I've never really took the notice of them I did until this viewing. And there is, well, there's been merchandise come and gone. This has a very strong retro life now. I mean, merchandise seems to be more now than there was back in the day. I don't know if that's true or not. Derek, you might be better to expound on that, if that's true.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it was no Star Wars, but they definitely, right. I mean, especially because there was two cartoons that came out. So the second that you get the cartoon, you get all the toys that go along with that. There were board games. They actually released the video game a couple of years back, which was supposed to be the original plot for Ghostbusters 3.
Oh, wow.
I had that. So yeah,
they,
yeah.
Yeah, they kind of made reference to the fact that this was the third in the trilogy that you were never going to see.
I didn't realize that. I played the game. I had the game. I had it for PS2, so I had like the cartoon version of them, but it was, I guess, the same story. I didn't realize that was based after.
Yeah, they said that was pretty closely based on what they were talking about.
Oh, though. Wow.
And I actually, there's a Kickstarter out there. Somebody made a really, really intensive looking Ghostbusters board game.
Oh, wow.
I saw
like a tabletop board game.
Right.
And they're doing a Kickstarter, and I got in on it, and they're at, you know, like something like $750,000 right now.
Damn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I am looking at it now because I am very interested in that. Okay, I have this saved for later.
What was that cartoon, the Ghostbusters with the big monkey?
That was Filmation Ghostbusters. That was a cartoon that was made before this movie that happened to have the same name.
No, one of the cartoons had a gorilla too.
There was the second one?
Because there was the Real Ghostbusters and then there's the Extreme Ghostbusters.
I was talking about Filmation Ghostbusters. I didn't know the Real Ghostbusters or the Extreme Ghostbusters had one.
I remember used to watch the real one and I had the Peter Venkman toy.
Yeah.
And they had Janine in the full get up with the proton pack too.
Oh, geez.
And she's another one. If you can find her on eBay, her figure's expensive. But no, the original Ghostbusters that with the gorilla, they had to buy the rights to use the name Ghostbusters because of that. Because that came out in what, like the 50s or something like that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it was reissued. I think it was riding the coattails of the Ghostbusters because I remember it being advertised and I got real excited about it. I'm like, what is this crap?
Yeah, it was like an Abbott and Costello type thing.
Yeah.
That was that cartoon was awful.
I think I had a Venkman as well toy, and I was too old to play with toys, but I was still getting them from time to time to have them because I always wanted them. And the fact that I had a Peter Venkman with a quote working unquote proton pack, that was awesome to have.
I had the one that's you could like push it and it sprung, it had spring action.
Oh no, I didn't have that one. Yeah, you might have. You do have a pencil on your desk with a snow globe Peter Venkman in it.
I did, because in high school, the four of us, we used to call ourselves the Ghostbusters.
Oh God, dorks!
Only because, like, one of us.
And lo and behold, 2016 female Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
you were a trendsetter.
Yes, I was.
No, it's all your fault.
Oh, sorry. No, the girl, one of the girls in our group of friends, her last name is Laotian, and it meant Ghostbusters. Her last name in Laotian.
I was going to say Laotian's a...
In Laotian.
Yeah. Is a... Yeah,
is translated right. to English as Ghostbusters. So we were like, oh my God, that's so funny. So when each of us would graduate, we each got a real Ghostbusters figure. So I got Venkman. My other friend that had glasses was Egon. And then we had Stan and Winston.
Yeah.
Because one of our friends was actually African American. So we were like, I'm sorry, racist. You don't have a choice.
Oh. Unless you see some shit that would turn you white. I can't believe I just said that.
Well, considering I was the only white one in the group, That probably wouldn't work.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
They were all Asian. That's right. I forgot. Yeah, I was the only,
grew up in Hawaii.
I was the only Caucasian.
So, and last but not least, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, considering my love for theme parks, and I have a podcast dedicated to theme parks, is the Ghostbusters Spooktacular at Universal Studios, which closed November 8th, 1996, which is 4 freaking months before I moved to Florida.
Oh,
so I never
man.
Saw it. But there is someone on the show tonight that has seen it.
Oh, yes. I saw it. When I first, I took a trip down here when I was in college at Thanksgiving time. I think I came down for Thanksgiving break. And we saw the Ghostbusters show.
There's some decent video considering the video technology of the mid-90s and what the show was. There's actually some good video that shows it. This thing looked like it was awesome.
It was. It was a really good show.
Did you guys see those links I sent you?
Yeah, they were really
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, hell yeah. I wonder if this new movie might spark interest again to doing something down there again.
It's very possible. It's very possible. I'm mad I didn't see it because I knew it existed. And I got the Universal Studios. I'm like, where is it? It's nowhere on the map. I can't find it. And then the next time I go to Universal Studios, it's like there's Twister. And then I put two and two together. I'm like, this is where Ghostbusters was. They're putting Twister. Who gives a crap about Twister? It's Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt. It's at least two exciting people you want to be on a ride with.
I think you're telling the world how I felt when I found out Jaws was closing down.
Oh, man.
You know?
Yeah, so it's those were pepper ghosts again, but to the extreme, not to just throw around the word to relate it back to the cartoon, but that was an extreme effect and it looked awesome, and sucks I didn't get to see it, but oh well. So I think with that we have thoroughly discussed this, and I don't think it's gonna be much of a surprise what our ratings are, but let's go through our ratings. What we do here, it's been a while, you may forget, we go through our 5-star rating for our original viewing, whenever that may have been, to what our 5-star rating was now. And I'll go ahead and go first. I know for sure it had to be at least a 4-star rating when I saw it in 84. Now, mind you, it was up against Indiana Jones and Empire Strikes Back the year before, so it had some stiff competition. So 4 is pretty good for a 12-year-old Matt viewing of it. Seeing it again the other night, oh my God, it's like I never stopped watching it. It was so good. It was so much fun. I think I appreciate it more, and really the storytelling for sure I didn't appreciate when I was 12. A lot of the practical effects are so impressive and still have me wondering 30 years later, how did they do that? I got to bump it up to a 4.5. It actually went up, one of those rare times for me on this show.
Very nice.
All right. Christy, why don't you go next?
I have to say mine sticks at a solid 4. And stays at a 4. The effects always kind of bugged me.
Oh, really?
Well, just the ones that weren't very good.
There's some that are dated. I can't argue that. I'm not going to sit here and say
like the devil
perfect.
Dog running was kind of like Harryhausen. So I just, but
I really do. I do give all that. I kind of wipe that off my grading scale because it's a comedy, and that's probably not fair to some ratings I gave other movies. But hey, that's the way it goes. It's the internet.
But I mean, like story wise and humor wise, it's definitely up there.
Nice. Chris, what about you?
If you know me, it's going to be short and sweet.
It's Ghostbusters, man.
There you go. It's one of the top 10 probably favorite films of all time for me. It's definitely in there.
Okay.
Seriously, it's like a movie that you quote left and right. It's part of my childhood. I was 11, and I'm giving it a 5 back then. I love it. I still love it. When it's on, I love it. I'm like Derek. Whenever it's on, I got to leave it on. Part 1.
Part 1.
Part 1. And watching it again, I saw it with Derek a couple of months ago in the theaters. I watched it again here. It's a movie that I just love to watch. No matter how old I get, I will always love Ghostbusters. Bill Murray, I love him to death. Aykroyd, love him. Ramis, love him. Ernie Hudson, you know, he's okay. But I'm giving it a 5 still. It's a movie I can't say anything that I don't like about the movie at all. It really holds close to my heart. I love it.
Nice. That's what sucks about living in a tourist/transient town. We don't get like those screenings of Indiana Jones like you had, or Ghostbusters, because people come and go so fast here, you can't advertise it to plan for a one-day event. So we don't get that stuff. So
I'm kind of envious when you guys get to do stuff like that.
Well, what's weird is that Derek just told me next month we're going to see Raiders at a theater. Yeah.
We don't get that. Anyway, back to, I did not mean to derail the ratings because I am most interested in hearing Derek's. Derek, what is your 1980 or your original rating, original viewing rating compared to your most recent viewing rating?
Well, I'm sure it's not a surprise, but when I was a kid, there were only a few movies that counted. It was the trilogy. It was Superman and it was Ghostbusters. So I would definitely give it a 5. For now, when it came back out in the theaters, I saw it 3 days in a row, as Chris knows. And I would have gone more if I could get somebody to go with me for yet a fourth or fifth time. Uh-huh. I watch it every single time it's on. I don't care what's going on. I give it a 5.
Nice, nice. Well, yes. Derek, for the record, if I still lived in that area, I would have went with you. I would have loved to see this on the big screen.
I would have sent him several times.
Well, that brings us to our top 5 list. And again, if you're not familiar with this, we do a top 5 list somehow based on the movie or based on a personal experience with the movie. And Derek came up with this list, a great idea for a list, but I think it was inspired by Chris, if I'm not mistaken.
That is true.
Oh, boy. And the title of the, actually, why don't you go ahead and explain it, Derek? This is your idea. I don't want to take all the thunder from you.
We're calling this top 5 movies we love, but our spouses do not. Chris has married a wonderful person who I've come to know and appreciate. And she's very sweet, very kind, but she has one fatal flaw. And she hates Bill Murray.
She does.
So that's what inspired this list.
Wow.
She and I have gotten into several battles about which is better, Ghostbusters or Back to the Future, and it's gotten ugly at times, as Chris knows.
Wow. It has. It was just got ugly yesterday, right?
Yes, it did.
Oh, yes, man. It did. All right, well, Derek, you want to pick the order on this? I've been picking order for everything else. You want to, with this being your list idea? Pick who goes first?
No, I'll leave it up to you.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just stick with what I was doing. I'll go first, and then Derek will do what we did the whole episode. So I'll start off first. And I do it, I have to admit, this was difficult to pinpoint because we have some differing opinions on, or I should say tastes in movies, and I could not narrow down. I had to include something from this genre, and I couldn't pick one, so I have to list a genre as my number 5, and that is all horror movies. Guys, I have not seen a horror movie in movie theaters in 15 years, and I know that's not a joke.
No, only because he doesn't want to go by himself because he's scared.
Well, there's no point going. No, that's not true. That's, if you count the Alien versus Predator movies as horror movies, I saw those, but I don't. In fact, I rarely see horror movies. Now, I had to go out of my way to see rent Cabin in the Woods because it was going to be one of the marquee haunted houses of Halloween Horror Nights. I just do not get to see horror movies anymore because someone in this room can't stand them.
Oh,
and it's not the dog.
No.
You don't like him?
No, I don't.
Okay. Number 4, I don't know if she hates this movie, but I do know for a fact she hates to watch this movie with me. And that would be Star Wars.
Oh,
she will not watch Star Wars with me.
I don't want to watch it with you. I'll watch it, but I won't watch it with you.
That's what I'm saying. You.
Yeah, so I don't hate the movie.
How often do you watch it without
her? I was going to say, when do you come home and go, I'm going to pop in Star Wars?
Sometimes I've turned it on when if I've run into like a TV version of it or something, it'll be on TV or I'll watch it.
I don't buy that.
I'll watch it.
I've never seen that, guys. I don't think that's
happening. Because I don't watch it when you're in the room. Because I know if I stop it when you're in the room, you'll be like, oh, this is where da-da-da-da happens. And he says, da-da-da-da-da.
My number three. I don't think you like this movie. I don't know if you hate it, but I know you got sick of me watching it. And I'm going to may get a lot of flack from my friends that I actually like this movie because I know they hate it. It is not the book. I will say it's not the book. But I do like this movie. And that is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I don't detest the movie.
But you were getting sick of me watching it like every day for like a year.
Yes.
Okay.
And you had an unhealthy love for that guy.
Who? Sam Rockwell? Fudge. Yeah. Oh, he's awesome. Sam Rockwell can do no wrong.
He is awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Now, these last movies she hates. I know that for a fact. Number 2, mm-hmm. The most underrated comedy of my lifetime. Harlan Williams in Rocket Man.
Really? That's not number 1?
Nope.
fucking hate that movie.
All right, well, this one you hate even more.
I would hide the damn DVD.
See if there's a baker under your bed.
No.
Well, it's me.
How do you know there's not a baker under your bed?
Oh, God.
That was Julie.
Y'all anyway. Shut up. Yeah.
Number one, you hate this movie. You hate this movie. I don't know why. I don't know how you can hate this movie. It's based after a true story. Stars one of the greatest entertainers that Hollywood has produced of all time, and who transcends generations.
Stop trying to sell it. I still hate it.
It is Clint Eastwood and Escape from Alcatraz.
Hate that movie.
Why do you hate that movie?
Because you don't. You turn it on every time it's on, and it's like on 24/7. There's going to be an Escape from Alcatraz channel, and it's always fucking on.
It's one of the greatest movies Clint Eastwood's ever started.
It is dumb. It is.
It's great.
It's true. Oh, it's a true story.
Yeah.
What? Don't. Yeah, me. Mythbusters proved it. All right, smarty pants. Let's get to your top five, and I think I'm going to have two guys on my side in this list.
You love all the movies I watch.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, number five. If my friend was here, he'd agree with me. Pitch Perfect.
Oh, hate that movie.
That is a good movie.
I like
what?
That. What? Yeah, I have that on Blu-ray. Oh,
I did like that movie.
Number four is one that I like. And I wanted to do it for the Grady's, but nobody else could get a copy of it. Zorro the Gay Blade.
I don't know if I hate that movie or not. I just have no interest in seeing it.
I just hate the title.
Number three is one that I made you watch on an episode, is Revenge of the Nerds.
I don't hate that. Oh, you I just don't? I don't like it as much as you do.
You don't like it because I recite every line?
Yeah, I hate. Well, I guess that's I don't like watching it with you. I guess that's a Star Wars for me.
There you go.
Okay, that's fair.
Number two, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah, I don't like that movie.
And number one is more of a genre.
Uh-huh.
Anything John Hughes.
That's a tough one, because there's a couple I really, really like, but then the rest I could live without never seeing again. That's a tough one. And the ones you like, I hate.
Like Ferris?
Pretty in Pink. Oh, okay. I hate Ferris Bueller's Day Off so much. I hate that fucking movie.
Life comes at you pretty fast.
I don't like Pretty in Pink. I don't like 16 Candles.
What would you think is my favorite movie that you don't like?
I don't know.
See, this was a hard one for me.
I can't think of any musicals that were in the movies that you like.
No.
I don't know. I don't know. That's a...
Oh, Grease 2.
Oh, I hate Grease 2.
Oh, stop it.
Reproduction.
Reproduction.
Oh, anyway. No, I really don't. I was curious what your list was going to be with the John Hughes stuff. There's the ones you really like, I really hate. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's good. Excuse me. That's a good number.
Originally, I had this backwards, and I was trying to think of the movies that you love that I hate.
Yeah.
I could only think of the two.
Rocket Man and Escape from Alcatraz. Yeah.
Because the rest of the movies, I can pretty much tolerate.
But, well, yeah. And that's why, apart from, well.
Those two, I'll fucking leave the house.
Everything else is like not. It's not necessarily you don't like them, you just don't like watching them with me.
I leave the room and close the door. Anyway,
there's two other guys that need to go through a list.
Okay.
Enough of me. Enough of us arguing. Chris.
Yes.
Give me your top five.
Kelly and I see a lot of movies together. Lots of ones that she don't care about, I usually see by myself. Most of these movies are from the 80s. You know what? I think they're all from the 80s. Tell you the truth.
Okay.
Number five, I'm combining, I guess, all four of them. I guess one came out in 2000s. She hates Rambo. She hates First Blood, hates Rambo 1, Rambo 2, Rambo 3, Rambo. She just hates. She hates Stallone, I think.
Oh, we're gonna start our own podcast.
Seriously, she's not a big fan of Stallone. What's he saying? I don't know what he's saying. I love these Rambos. I love Rambos. Don't fuck with Rambo. All right.
Greedy and lazy.
He's greedy and lazy, man. Absolutely. Number four is the other Stallone person. Is Schwarzenegger. She's not a big fan of him either. Commando. I love Commando. Let us up steam, Bennett. I love Commando. I love it. Wrong. I love. Just don't fuck with Commando, all right? Number three is another Stallone movie, which I'm telling you right now, it's one of the greatest buddy movies ever. Tango and Cash. Kurt Russell is handsome as hell, that flowing hair. Stallone's awesome as shit. I love this movie. Tango and Cash, Terry Hatcher. Oh, my God. Don't fuck with Tango and Cash. Every movie. Now, number two and number one have the same actor.
Okay.
Now, every holiday season, I have to watch this movie. And she hates when I watch this movie. She hates it. She won't watch it with me. She doesn't want to watch it. Stars Bill Murray.
Oh, Scrooge. God, really?
I love Scrooge.
We did that for the Gradies, and it was okay.
I love him. I love everything about the movie. It's funny. I love it. I love it. And you get to see Nipple. And number one is the one we just did, Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. She hates,
I don't know why she does not like this movie.
I'm surprised. Yeah. I mean,
she's wrong.
She is wrong.
I didn't know she hated Bill Murray. That explains a lot of that, but I thought the rest of the cast might make up for it, like Dan Aykroyd. And
I don't think she's a Dan Aykroyd fan either, but she just okay. She doesn't like Bill Murray. She always calls him ugly and pit face, and he's not there to like woo you over. He's there to make you laugh.
Yeah.
And he does a great job at it. So, Derek, I'm sorry. My wife hates Ghostbusters.
Well, if you don't like Bill Murray, okay. This would be a tough one to like. So,
Right.
I don't say I agree with her, but I say I understand. All right, Derek. Derek, you are in a sense, the newlywed of us all. You've been married the least amount of time of the four of us.
That's true.
How on earth can you have five movies that your spouse hates at this point of your relationship?
You bring up a good point. I actually didn't think this was going to be nearly as hard as it actually was. I was telling Chris beforehand, I have a few bundles of DVDs, just books of DVDs. And I made her go through them the one night and said, just look through them and tell me which ones you don't like. And there was honestly only one hundreds that she audibly said, oh, I hate this movie. And that's my number five. So okay. My number five is Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, okay.
She said that she loves the book and she didn't think it ever needed to be made into a movie. And I said, I love the book and love seeing them up on the big screen, seeing them finally come to life. You know, I always wanted to be that kid going on those adventures. Mm-hmm. And you get to see it on the big screen. I thought it was beautiful.
Wow.
Oh.
I didn't cry like Chris would. But yeah. My number four and my number three are actually movies that she loves that I can't stand. So my number four is Bubble Boy. Travolta movie.
Yes, okay, that's what I, yeah. Okay.
not the boy in the bubble.
Boy in the plastic bubble, yeah.
I just can't sit through more than 10 minutes of that movie, unless it's the Vern Troyer scene. Movie just hurts my head.
I've never seen that. That came out while Chris and I and Dave worked at the theater, and I just by the trailer alone, I was like, no, thanks.
Yeah.
Number three is another one that she loves that I can't stand. It's Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh. We bought that and now I regret it.
We had a short fascination with that was very short-lived.
I saw it in the theater and thought it was kind of funny, and then I saw it repetitively everywhere, and it just makes me want to, you know, put a spoon in my ear. It's awful.
My kids now, Derek, are all over that. Whenever that's on, they will watch it. They think it's so funny, and they think John Heder is just hysterical.
Gosh.
Eat the ham, tuna.
Yeah, gosh.
No, it just aggravates me to no end. I have to walk away from it. number two, I have to admit, I think I like this a little bit just because I know it drives her nuts, which may be a little evil, is Space Jam, which is a Bill Murray movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. I just always get sucked into watching it. And every time we go to Target and it's there for $5, I always have to make a point of pointing it out. And she always walks away from me in the middle of the store. And my number one is not one that she doesn't like. It's just like Christy was saying, it's one that she just doesn't need to watch with me ever again. It's Purple Rain. I can watch. I don't know what my fascination is with that movie. I grew up loving Prince, and I can watch that movie every other day.
Wow.
It's just one of those movies that I get instantly sucked into, and I sing along with all the songs.
I've never heard anyone say that about that movie. I like the music in that movie. Don't get me wrong. Me too. But yeah,
great soundtrack. The movie. I don't think I could get past that.
Well, right? See, I think I watched the movie more comedically than it's supposed to be a drama, and I sit there and I laugh at it because it's just so dumb. But then you also get the great songs. It's just one that I really enjoy. And she's done watching it with me.
I was done the moment I saw it. Well, now you know. How long have you been married?
It was a year in October.
Oh, okay. So all year. So you got at least, she's just based off to me and Christy, another 14 years to get a complete list. And then when you hit Chris's, how long has it been for you, Chris? Almost 20 years now?
Since, I think 17, since 97.
Okay, so 17. Yeah. So in a couple of years after that, you'll make the list real easy. So you got that to look forward to.
Thank you.
Well, that is it. That was, it's always a different episode when it's a movie we all like, but man, I really liked watching this and I liked being able to talk about it. So I really enjoyed spending this evening with all of you, even you, Christy.
Oh! Is she even there? I don't hear her say
anything. You can enjoy the couch.
Oh, yeah.
You can go and be your own rocket man.
You're not going to bust her ghost tonight.
You're going to have single fire rockets.
Oh, I get it. I get it now. Well, join us for our next episode. We will be announcing that of what it is and when it is on our Facebook page. So if you're not following us on Facebook, go ahead and join up now. It is facebook.com/thegradies, THEGR80S. And until then, I will say thank you for listening. And I also want to thank everyone for joining me. Thank you, Christy.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Chris.
I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Thank you, Chris.
You're quite welcome. Anytime, Matt.
And Derek, a special thanks to Derek for joining us.
Yay, Derek.
For not only giving us some great knowledge on Ghostbusters that I was very looking forward to hearing and was very excited to hear it, but also giving us that great top five list. So, Derek, thank you for joining us this episode.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. And I hope that the next episode isn't in 2016.
No promises. I ain't afraid of no ghosts.